Chapter 11. Divinus Prime. An animal howled in pain. The sound was tormented and strange, as though heard through water. For a few seconds, Lexicanium Antros thought it might just be in his head. Then he noticed that his suit was droning statistics at him, describing the status of his vital functions and the integrity of his armour, as though he had survived some kind of crash. The suit spoke of temperate environmental conditions and a life-sustaining atmosphere, and he realized that Mephiston's blood right had been a success. He was on the world that Zin had lost. He was on Divinus Prime. He opened his eyes, but saw only a blinding whiteness. His eyes were adjusting quickly to the glare, but he could see nothing clearly. He thought he could make out a forest spread out around him, but there was something oddly regimented about the rows of soaring, pale trunks. There was another tormented howl, louder and more agonized than the first. Antros tried to move and managed to wrench an arm free with a crunch of breaking stone. He blinked several times, dimming his visor further and slowly revealing a dizzying sight. He was hundreds of feet up in the air, embedded in one of the structures he had mistaken for trees. As his vision continued to improve, he saw that they were man-made, skyscraping bone-white columns that were strikingly beautiful. Pale, twisted spires, intricately woven from millions of spars and arches, giving each one the delicate, honeycombed appearance of a needle-shaped seed pod. It was only as he looked at the tower he was perched on that he realized the incredible truth. This forest of white towers, tumbling towards the horizon in every direction, was made entirely of bones. The planet was an ossuary, built on a scale that left him dazed. How many millions of bones must have been used to create this endless vista? He looked at the bones that surrounded him and saw how oddly liquefied they looked. Every femur and rib slumped and merged with the bone below, sagging and looping like folds of lace. He tapped the bone beneath his hand, a contorted skull, and it crumbled at his touch. The bones had been petrified. They had been here so long, they had been transformed into crumbling stone sculptures. Countless thousands of bodies were stacked beneath him in this single, huge column. He saw the skeletons of humans and other creatures he did not recognize, in such incredible numbers that they had become a kind of morbid, abstract art, a gleaming exposition of death, baking slowly under a heavy, somnolent sun. As Antros grew accustomed to the disorientating angle, he realized why he had mistaken the fossil sculptures for trees. As well as a central trunk, hundreds of bodies wide and thousands deep, there were countless branches jutting out over a flat, sun-baked scrubland that stretched out below him. The scale of the construction was staggering. Even if Antros ignored the grim nature of their contents, the idea that someone had built structures of this size was bewildering. They equaled even the greatest basilicas and fortresses of Baal. Antros tore his gaze from the surreal landscape and saw that his legs were sunk inside a carefully designed architrave, constructed from a coiled loop of spines, and one of his arms was trapped in an elegant turret formed from hundreds of ribcages. The pained howl echoed through the bones again, and he wrenched his arm free. Chalk dust enveloped him as he clambered onto a balustrade and looked out across the fields of white spires. There was no sign of the others. Had he arrived here alone? Mephiston had warned them all that even he had never performed such an ambitious blood rite before, translating several beings through the immaterium, using nothing but his force of will. It was dangerous, to say the least, but Mephiston had a way of making the impossible seem commonplace. None of them would have dreamt of doubting him. But what if he was the only one who had reached Divinus Prime intact? What if the others had been left in the Ostensorio? As Antros scoured the landscape for a sign of them, it occurred to him that this might not even be Divinus Prime. But if it was, if this was Divinus Prime, then the responsibility had fallen to him. He would have to discover what had hidden the cardinal world from view. Mephiston would be relying on him to make contact with the rest of the Imperium.
Lexiconium Antros!
Said a voice from above. He looked up and saw a blood angel, entangled in a grand archway formed from a single enormous ribcage. He saw from the warrior's armour markings that it was battle brother Mandicus. The bones that had trapped Mandicus must have once belonged to an equine creature, but of a species far larger than a horse, because they dwarfed the blood angel. Mandicus was shaking violently, and he had his hands held over his head. He was staring at the silent bone cities that surrounded them.
Quick!
He said, his voice contorted by pain. Antros realized that Mandicus was the source of the bestial howling he had heard. He was in agony.
Get me out of this!
Mandicus's voice was barely intelligible.
Rom! Inside it!
Antros saw that, from the waist down, his armour had merged with the stone, and where his body met the petrified bones, there was a quickly spreading skirt of blood, vivid and shocking against the white stone. He was bleeding to death. Antros began hauling himself up the tower towards him, but the weight of his power armour caused the chalky fossils to crumble, slowing his progress as Mandicus began to howl again.
I am the blood of Sanguinius, said a quiet voice.
Reality blurred, as though shaken in a tumbler of water. The bone tower vanished, and Antros was back in the ostensorio again. The librarians around the edge of the hall were lit up by their blazing staffs. He could see their souls hunched over them in the form of spectral angels, wings spread and eyes burning with empiric fire. Antros was about to cry out to them to explain what had happened to Mandicus. But before he could talk, the ostensorio was gone. He found himself on a broad transitway, a road of chalky white stone rippling with the heat of a late afternoon sun, blurring the horizon with heat haze. He was once more surrounded by the bone trees, but now he was looking up at them from ground level. The size of them warped his perspective as he craned his neck to see their pinnacles. They seemed to bend, leaning over him like tired old men stooping to examine the ground. As Antros studied them, he noticed something that troubled him. For as long as he could remember, he had heard the galaxy whispering to him, filling his mind with half-heard prayers and visions. The elders of his tribe had feared his second sight, and had his life taken a different turn, he would have been executed as a warlock or sequestered onto one of Terra's mysterious black ships for a fate unknown. As a successful Blood Angel's aspirant, however, he had found his way into Epistolary Racilus's care and begun the slow, still incomplete task of harnessing his mind. But now, the voices had been silenced. The idea pained him, as if he had just lost part of his body.
The Dolorous Towers, whispered somebody.
Antros thought that perhaps his powers had returned. Then he looked down and saw that he was no longer alone. Kneeling beside him, his white face paint streaked with tears, was Confessor Zin. It was he who had given a name to these soaring ossuaries, and he kept repeating the words, rocking with his hands clasped together in prayer. He was quite oblivious to anything else. Standing a few feet away was Racilus, his head bowed and thrown into shadow. He was tracing runes into the dust with his foresword and talking to himself in hushed, urgent tones. Further down the road was Mephiston. He was crouched in the shadows, his hand pressed onto the ground, embers drifting up from between his fingers. He stood, wiped some blood from his palm, and strode off away from them down the road, hair trailing behind him like a vivid white pennant. Captain Vitrinus and his two squads of tactical marines marched behind him, scanning the roadside as they went, peering at Divinus Prime through the sights of their bolters. Squad Seraphus took one side of the road and Squad Hestius the other. In their crimson armour, they looked like blood pouring towards the horizon. Antros noticed there was no sign of Battle Brother Mandicus, and a few others had vanished too. Clearly not everyone had survived the journey. Two squads had set out, along with the three librarians, Captain Vitrinus, and an apothecary. But now Sergeant Hestius was only accompanied by two of his men, and Sergeant Seraphus only led three. That left 12 Blood Angels in total, enough to face anything the planet could throw at them, decided Antros.
Lexicalium, said a voice from behind him, and he turned to face Zin. Could you help me up?
Asked the priest, wiping the tears from his eyes. Antros nodded vaguely, still disorientated by the psychic silence that had enveloped him. He stepped to Confessor Zin's side and hauled him to his feet. Zin looked at him with wild, glistening eyes.
Do you understand?
He asked, grasping at Antros's armour.
Do you know what you're seeing?
Antros shrugged. I have seen Osiris before, but never on this scale. In the catacombs beneath the monasteries, I have seen monks preserve their dead in great caskets of bones, but nothing like this. Zin shook his head.
Brother Librarian, the Dolorous Towers are not simple tombs. They were not built by the hand of man.
Zin reeled away from Antros, staggering across the road and looking up at the white towers. His words took on an impassioned, fiery tone that he had obviously honed over decades of preaching. Racilus looked up from his work to watch the performance.
When the Emperor first came to this world, said Zin, it had another name, a name too dreadful for me to utter, but let it be simply said that it was a benighted pit, a well of profanity and false worship. The souls of this world were sick with corruption. They turned on the Emperor and his missionaries, assaulting them with hexes and vile oaths, calling out the things that lurk in the space between spaces. Even the God Emperor could not sanctify entire nations of unbelievers. So he ordered his servant, a moon wolf by the name of Lupercal, to descend from the heavens and watch over the demon worshippers while the God Emperor forged a weapon so powerful it could leech their dark arts from their hearts and leave them powerless. As Lupercal harried the treacherous occultists, the God Emperor delved beneath the ground and began to devour the molten core of their world. For 100 days he feasted on the inferno, his flesh slothing from his bones as he ate until he was no more than an ember of divine power, flickering in the dark places that mortal sight can never hope to comprehend. On the 100th day he emerged and vomited a sword forged from the planet's heart. As he rose, reborn from the flames, the God Emperor raised the blade and commanded the storm-wracked skies.
Zin leveled a trembling finger at the nearest of the bone towers.
And the planet answered. From the bowels of this world rose a great symbol of his power, an endless multitude of mountain-sized blades made from the bones of every non-believer who had ever died here.
Zin staggered, drunk on his own rapture.
The holy blades soared into the heavens, leeching the sorceress from witch and warlock alike, until the heretics squirmed beneath their towers. Righteous judgment, Some called them Dolorous Towers, and others called them the Penitent Trees, but all saw the God Emperor's wrath made manifest. Then these glorious monuments unleashed the magic they had captured from the heretics and hurled it into the blade the Emperor had forged beneath the world's core.
Zin paused, gasping for breath.
The people of this world saw truth for the first time in centuries,
he continued.
And as the glamour fell from their eyes, the heretics fell to their knees. Before the penitent trees, they swore a terrible binding oath that they called simply the vow. Then the God Emperor saw a wonderful truth, that his blade had created a people more devout than any of his subjects. So he gave their world a new, more appropriate name. Divinus Prime.
What was the oath? Asked Antros, dragging his gaze from the towering obelisks to the wild-eyed priest. The fervor vanished from Zin's eyes, and he staggered to a halt, caught off guard by the question. His expression changed in an instant, from fiery zeal to something resembling guilt. The change was so dramatic that Antros almost laughed in surprise. He guessed that the vow was connected in some way to the thing Zin was so desperate to avoid mentioning. The blade petrific. When Zin spoke again, his voice was muted and hesitant.
He swore to protect this world until...
Until what?
Asked Mephiston. No one had heard the chief librarian's return, and Zin flinched in surprise. Racilus rose to his feet, leaving his runes and saluting the chief librarian.
Until the day of wrath,
said Zin, after taking a deep breath and raising his chin.
When both heretic and believer shall receive a just reward.
Mephiston seemed about to press him for more, but then he nodded and waved down the road to where Captain Vitrinus and the two squads of tactical marines were waiting, gathered in orderly ranks, their guns held across their chests.
There are people ahead of us on this road, said Mephiston. I can hear them praying. There are no more than an hour's march away, but their prayers are growing weaker. We do not have long to reach them.
He looked at Racilus.
Finish your work, Gaius. Seal the rift and follow as quickly as you can.
Then he took Zin by the shoulder.
Walk with me, Confessor. Tell me what you know of the geography of this world.
As the chief librarian marched away, Zin staggered and lurched after him, cringing like an obese child being reprimanded by its parent.
This place has a colourful past, then,
said Antros, giving Racilus a sideways glance after watching the pair head off down the road. Strange that these magically summoned towers so resemble all the ossuaries seen on other worlds, all of them known to be simple burial practice of the indigenous population.
It is easy to dismiss such picturesque legends, neophyte, said Racilus. But faith in the Emperor is rarely worth mocking, whatever form it takes.
Faith does not have to make fools of us, replied Antros.
Oh, but myths can be so much more enlightening than the dreary truth.
Racilus glanced at the petrified spires.
Holy blades, summoned into being by the God Emperor himself. Such ideas have kept this world pure, while so many around it have fallen.
Antros shook his head. Pure? We have yet to see what the priest's ideas have done to this world. Perhaps we should wait a little while before we praise them for their devotion. From what the chief librarian described, they are as confused and violent as the rest of the sector. Racilus studied Antros through the visor of his helmet.
Would you rather Zin looked to other gods?
Of course not.
Antros was irritated to be so misunderstood. The God Emperor's light is all we have. But surely you and I are seekers of truth. We must draw a distinction between pure faith and obscure superstition. What use is the God Emperor's light if we are not clear-sighted enough to see it? Why else do we spend our hours recording and studying? He looked at the towers. These are tombs. The dead of this world have been left to rest in the open air, rather than buried beneath the sod. And the atmosphere of Divinus Prime is such that the bones are calcified and preserved. These are quite mundane facts, rather than anything more elevated. Racilus shrugged.
Perhaps, perhaps not. It is right that you should place such value in our records and archives, Neophyte. But do not let that shield you from the truth. The entire store of knowledge in our librarium amounts to a guttering candle illuminating one corner of a vast, unknowable canvas.
Antros looked at the uninspiring shape of Zin, stumbling after Mephiston, and decided that some candles illuminated more than others. He tried to reach out with his mind to see what the priest had been holding back, but the odd silence that had filled his thoughts seemed to have affected his other abilities. He could see no glimpse of Zin's thoughts. "My lord," he said, glancing at Racilus, "your vision, your second sight, is it..." Racilus nodded and looked up at the clouds.
"We are now behind whatever barriers have hidden Divinus Prime. We are blind."
Racilus stepped back to the runes he had carved into the road, resting the tip of his sword against the circle surrounding the symbols. Both circle and runes erupted into blue flames that licked and crackled around the design. The librarian kept his head lowered as the runes lifted from the ground like embers, shimmering and rotating, following the complex series of lines and intersections that he had described in the dust. There was an explosion of noise as the fire summoned a peculiar audience. Dozens of crows landed on the chalk road, their black forms in stark contrast to the white stone as they hopped and fluttered around the edge of the shimmering circle. There were dozens of the birds, and their raucous, barked laughter rang out strangely through the barren fields. The landscape was otherwise devoid of life, and it was clear that the birds had been drawn by the power of the librarian's incantation. Racilus paid the birds no heed, and with a single, muttered syllable, he completed the ritual. A blinding column of light shone up from the circle, illuminating his regal features as it rose past him and pointed up into the heavens. Antros gave a nod of respect as the column of fire reached even higher than the Osiris. It spread across the dun belly of the clouds, gilding the sky like lightning hurled back at the firmament. He did not fully understand this, but he knew Racilus was sealing the portal Mephiston had used to bring them here. Whatever the exact nature of the conjuration, it made a glorious sight as it danced fitfully across the clouds, writing blazing words of power across the sky. Antros gasped as the lights revealed something unexpected. Since they had arrived on Divinus Prime, the sky had hidden behind low, gloomy clouds, but as the blue flames flickered overhead, they revealed a peculiar sight. In the few gaps of clear sky that were revealed, there should have been a deepening dusk, littered with a few early evening stars. But instead, the clouds parted to reveal a mirror image of the landscape below. Each of the delicate, funereal spires was clearly reflected in the firmament, pointing back down towards the ground.
"Does your science explain that?" asked Racilus, without looking at Antros.
Antros said nothing, and Racilus snatched his sword from the circle and backed away from the column of light. The flames died immediately, plunging them back into the dusky half-light. All that remained was a faint glow around the runes he had inscribed in the ground. Racilus dropped to one knee and traced the shapes with his finger.
"This world has been masked for a reason." He looked up at the sky. "To hide something." "We should catch up with the others," he said, standing and striding past Antros.
As they hurried from the site of the ritual, they were accompanied by the hoarse cackling of the crows, launching themselves back into the twilight. After an hour's brisk march, they reached a narrow valley that crossed the landscape for as far as they could see, a great scar in the plains, hundreds of feet deep. The road dropped away beneath them, plunging down a steep incline before slicing across the valley floor towards a walled city that looked back at them from the top of the opposite slope, watching over the valley like an ancient sentinel. Even from such a distance, they could see that it was a city of bones, a tomb city built of the same intricately woven fossils as the towers. It was a dwarf beside the penitent trees that surrounded it, but the rotunda at its centre was clearly a colossal structure. Dusk was quickly becoming night, and its ivory dome gleamed against the indigo sky like a fallen moon. Confessor Zinn whispered a prayer and made the sign of the Aquila as he saw trails of smoke drifting up from behind the sheer white walls.
"Do you recognize the place?" asked Mephiston, turning to Zinn. The priest nodded, looking dazed.
"Tarn Abbey."
He waved his crozius at the tiny clusters of light that peppered the gloomy valley below.
"The monasteries that cover these plains all belong to the diocese of Cardinal Victus."
He looked back at the fortified city opposite.
"This abbey is built around Lake Telos."
Zinn's face paint was still streaked and smeared from his tears, and, to Antros at least, he looked like a savage, a berserker, ready to charge, screaming down into the darkened valley.
"It's one of the holiest sites on Divinus Prime. Ooh, Lake Telos marks the spot at which the God Emperor emerged from the underworld."
He gave Mephiston a wary glance, then looked back at the flames. Antros was about to ask a question when he noticed that Mephiston was not looking at the city, but at the road that crossed the valley. The white stone made it easy to follow its route through the gloomy scrubland, but it took Antros a few more seconds to notice that it was lined with winged shapes, birds of some kind. He thought at first they might be more crows. Then he dismissed the idea, realizing how huge the birds would have to be. He blinked a few times, and his visor zoomed in on one of the shapes.
"By the throne,"
he muttered, as he saw the gruesome truth. The road was lined with crucifixions. The poor souls had been caged in wooden frames that resembled eagles, and their emaciated bodies were naked and scorched, blackened by days of exposure to the fierce sun. The other librarians did not reply, and he realized they had already seen what he had seen, as had Captain Vitrinus and the other blood angels.
"What is it?"
demanded Zinn, looking around the group, painfully aware that he was missing something dreadful. Mephiston shook his head.
"It is as I warned you, Confessor Zinn. Divinus Prime is at war with itself."
"No, I will not believe it,"
said Zinn, but his denial lacked the vehemence he had shown on Baal, and, as they began their descent, he prayed quietly under his breath, glancing warily at the shadow-haunted slopes. By the time they reached the first of the corpses, the last traces of dusk had faded, and darkness had fallen. The Adeptus Astartes had no need of light to see their way, but they knew their mortal companions did. So the tactical marines triggered the lumens fixed to their bolters, revealing the full horror of the scene. Their light picked out the corpses, giving them the appearance of tormented, grimacing actors, caught in the footlights as they ended their sad tragedy before a backdrop of pure pitch. Zinn howled as he saw the first crucifixion. The dead priest, slumped pitifully inside the bird-shaped cage, was clearly a member of his own order. His robes had been stained dark brown with dried blood, but a few patches of white revealed their original colour, and his frontal hair had been shaved away in just the same shape as Zinn's. He also wore the same medallion as Zinn, a capital I with an iron halo at its centre, surrounding a skull device.
My beloved brother,
groans Zin.
Rejoice if in your fate. Your light will burn as one with the God Emperor. You hadst faith, and you will have succor.
Mephiston nodded to Captain Vitrinus, and he led some of his men ahead, scouring the gruesome cages for signs of movement. The group waited in respectful silence until Zin had finished his prayer. He turned and looked up at Mephiston.
Estra Angelus,
he said, his voice weak.
Such an atrocity cannot go unpunished.
He looked at the tactical marines' flickering lights as they moved on down the road, revealing countless more crucifixions.
The dogs behind this must face the Emperor's judgment!
Antros expected the chief librarian to balk at such a demanding tone, but Mephiston nodded in reply. Then he lifted Vitaris and showed Confessor Zin the blade. It was pulsing with a hungry, vermilion light. They continued their march down the road in grim silence, attempting to ignore the mouldering colonnade that flanked them. Antros mouthed a prayer for each one he passed. Not a prayer for their easy passing, but a promise that they would be avenged. They were halfway across the valley when they saw that Captain Vitrinus and some of his men were waiting for them, huddled over something in the middle of the road. As they approached, Antros saw that it was one of the crucified priests. He was still alive, and Vitrinus's men had cut him down from the eagle cage. He was wailing and trying to lash out at the Space Marines, but his feeble limbs were useless against their Adeptus Astartes bulk. Vitrinus's sanguinary priest, Brother Cassali, was attempting to treat the man's wounds with the medical equipment attached to his wrist armour, a bulky device called an Arthesium, bristling with syringes and blades. He was moving with great care. The drugs in his Narthesium were not intended for a mortal man, much less a skeletal wreck of a mortal man. Cassali was clearly having some success, though. By the time the rest of the group reached the scene, the priest's breathing had calmed, and he was looking up at his rescuers with less mania. He was so wasted and filthy that he looked as though he had been exhumed rather than saved. But there was something proud in his features that, along with his gore-splattered beard, marked him out as a man of importance. Antros imagined that he must once have been a great leader or prophet before being brought so low. At the sight of Confessor Zin, the priest cried out, blood spraying from his cracked lips.
Brother,
he said, his voice little more than a croak.
This valley is tainted. Oh, do not leave me here. Take me back the way you came. We must get word to the labyrinth.
Zin hurried over and dropped to his knees, cradling the skeletal man in his arms.
What monster did this to you?
He said, his voice full of outrage. The man tried to sit up, but the sanguinary priest held him down and shook his head. Zin nodded in agreement and encouraged the priest to lie back.
What is your name, brother?
He said.
What happened here?
The man lay back, clasping Zin's arm, clearly terrified of the Blood Angel.
Prester Brennus,
he said, pausing to look for a sign of recognition in Zin's face. Seeing none, he continued.
We must leave here and take word to Arch-Cardinal Travis. He must know that Tarn Abbey has fallen to the Enlightened. The unbegotten prince was here.
Mephiston appeared out of the darkness, his bloodless face lit up in the torchlight. The man gasped in terror and tried to back away.
Calm yourself, said Zin. There is nothing to fear, Prester Brennus.
He lowered his voice to an awed whisper.
This is the Astra Angelus.
The name clearly meant nothing to the man, so Zin tried another tack.
He is Mephiston, the chief librarian of the Blood Angels. He is one of the Adeptus Astartes.
The mention of Adeptus Astartes clearly did mean something to the man, but nothing that lessened his fear. If anything, he looked even more terrified.
Enlightened?
Mephiston asked, looking at Zinn for an explanation. Brenner shook his head, confused. The movement caused him to pass out, and his head lolled back on the arms of the sanguinary priest. His eyes rolled back in their sockets, almost entirely bloodshot, and he let out a rattling moan. He looked like a collection of bones hurled to the ground as part of a divination rite, held together by a thin layer of skin and little else. The sanguinary priest placed the man on the ground and slid a device under the skin of his forearm. It looked to Antros like one of the tools used in the librarium scriptoria for illuminating texts. A flat, sharpened spike of metal, like a stylus. Kasalai muttered a few words as it broke the man's skin, and then he pulled the blade out again, sputtering a few droplets of green, viscous chemicals as he did so. The priest's eyes opened, and he lifted his head to continue talking, seemingly unaware of the interruption.
"Where have you come from?"
Presta Brennus asked Zinn, looking past him and making out the rest of the group for the first time.
"How have you not heard of the Enlightened?"
"We only arrived here today, brother. We have travelled here from Baal."
"Off-worlders?"
gasped the man.
"How is that possible?"
He tried to point at the sky.
"Since the miracle, we have been unable to contact anyone."
His voice teetered on the brink of tears.
"It is over a year since we heard from the Synod. We do not even know if the Ministerium still endured."
"I am Confessor Zinn, a censor prophetic of the Luminous Throne, and I can assure you with all my heart that we very much endure. You may have been isolated by this miracle, as you name it, but you have never been forgotten. With every day that passed, we have been working towards a time when we could step on these holy rocks and return them to the God Emperor's light."
Zinn gestured at Mephiston.
"Every seer and prophet in the Cronian sector has been granted a wondrous vision."
Zinn's eyes burned in the dark.
"A vision of an Astra Angelus who would lead us through the veils that surround Divinus Prime, so that we may rid you of this curse."
Zinn paused for breath.
"We are here to save you, brother."
Presta Brennus dragged himself into a sitting position, gripping Zinn's forearm with one hand and pointing at the crucified corpses with the other.
"Then you should know how we have been betrayed. These murders are all the work of the false prophet. He calls himself a prince while preaching death and violence against his own kind."
The cadaverous priest was spitting and snorting as he gripped harder, his bony fingers sinking into Zinn's meaty flesh.
"He has torn us apart with his hateful creed."
"The unbegotten prince?" asked Mephiston from the shadows. The priest flinched at the sound of his voice and replied to Zinn rather than the chief librarian.
"No one is sure where he came from. Some say that he was once a simple anchorite living in the caves beneath Volgatis. But there is nothing priestly about him that I could see. If he ever had any true faith, he has abandoned..."
Brennus paused to cough up another thick crimson gobbet, grimacing at the sight of his own blood, before continuing.
"He claims that his followers have given him that absurd sacrilegious title. They call him the Unbegotten Prince and claim that he was not born, but sent to Divinus Prime as a fragment of the God Emperor's being, the divine avatar that fell from the sky."
Brennus sneered.
Foil, irreligious, such posturing is worse than...
He waved weakly at the eagle cages.
Than these monstrosities.
Mephiston glanced at the city, looking down on them from the far side of the valley, its pale dome still visible in the moonlight.
And this unbegotten prince, what is his creed?
Prester Brennus replied to Mephiston without turning to face him, his face contorted by disgust at what he had to convey.
He says that everything we believe is a lie, that all our centuries of devotion, honouring the vow, was a mistake. He claims that tradition is nothing, that permanence is nothing, that...
Permanence?
Yes. The prince beguiles his followers. He tells them that we can only serve the God Emperor by abandoning our strictures and tenets, by changing and rethinking everything we do.
Brennus looked at Zin.
He mocks us, Confessor. He calls us slaves to heretical dogma. He says that we must learn new ways to think, new ways to be. Progress through change, he says.
The disdain dripped from his lips.
Change!
Mephiston watched him closely and then looked back at the distant dome of the abbey.
The abbey is lost,
groaned Brennus, his voice growing weaker.
You must change your route. Whatever lies beyond those gates is not fit for honest eyes.
He pawed at Zin's robes again.
You must take word to the Arch-Cardinal. Tell him what has been done here.
But what of Cardinal Vectis?
Asked Zin, looking up at the city.
Is he still in there?
Brenner shook his head and clawed at his blistered scalp in distress, sending rivulets of fresh blood down over his face. Then he pointed at one of the nearby crucifixions.
They showed the cardinal no more mercy than the rest of us.
His anguish gave him a renewed burst of vigour, and he spoke clearly again.
Leave this valley, brother. Do not think of those poor souls up there. There is nothing to be done. The prince may be leading his cultists to the labyrinth by now, and the priests there could still be saved. If you hurry to the Arch-Cardinal, you can warn him that the abbey has fallen. He still has time to recall his full strength to the labyrinth and prepare his defences.
The labyrinth?
Asked Racilus, keeping a distance from the priest, as though not wanting to be tainted by his pitiful condition. Brennus peered into the darkness over Zin's shoulder, dismayed to see other hulking giants looming over him.
You know of the labyrinth, surely, Confessor, he said to Zin.
Zin nodded and turned to Racilus.
Mormutha, the capital, seat of the Arch-Cardinal. The locals call it the labyrinth. It is there that I have asked your chief librarian to lead us. If we can reach Mormutha, I can consult with my brother and find out what has befallen Duvenus Prime.
He looked around for Mephiston and saw that the chief librarian was still studying the ruined city.
Lord Mephiston, said Zin, will you do as my brother asks? Mormutha is 4 or 5 days' march from here.
Mephiston continued staring into the darkness.
4 days' march. And how long did this unbegotten prince strike out for the labyrinth?
Prester Brennus was struggling to speak.
The abbey fell. It fell two nights ago. He may have marched straight on for the capital.
Racilus stepped to Mephiston's side.
And we have no transport. If the cultists have headed that way, they would reach the city before us.
Mephiston nodded.
Prester Brennus, he said, would we find vehicles of any kind in the abbey?
Brennus nodded, and then shook his head, as he realized Mephiston's intentions. He tried to look at Confessor Zinn, but his eyes struggled to focus.
The Abbey is lost, he managed to gasp.
It was, said Mephiston,
glancing at Captain Vitrinus. Vitrinus nodded in reply and waved his squads on, ordering them to advance boldly along the road, making no attempt to hide their approach.
My lord! Exclaimed Confessor Zinn. Did you hear what he said? We must leave!
Brother Casselai, said Mephiston, ignoring Zinn and glancing at the apothecary.
Casselai nodded in reply, and hauled Prester Brennus to his feet.
Take me to your abbey, priests. I will show you how the sons of Sanguinius deal with heretics.
Despite the haunting silence that hung over the valley, there was no mistaking the violence that had recently befallen Tarn Abbey. The gates had been smashed, and the triumphal arches were scorched and blackened. The windows that looked out of them were lightless and blind, but Mephiston raised his hand for the small column to halt. He looked up at the city for a while, silhouetted before its vast ivory walls. Then he nodded at Captain Vitrinus, who directed Squad Hestius with a silent, chopping gesture, ordering them to fan out around the outside of the building as he and the rest of the Blood Angels made straight for the gaping mouth of the abbey. Mephiston and Rasilus walked boldly towards the gates, flanked by Captain Vitrinus and the battle brothers of Squad Seraphus. To Antros's frustration, he was ordered to follow at a safe distance, acting as nursemaid to the two priests, one of whom could barely walk. He marched before Confessor Zinn, but he had to half-carry Prester Brennus. The group approached the sinuous, ornately worked fossils that used to house the abbey's towering doors. To Antros, it felt as though they were walking through the jaws of a skeletal behemoth, its vast, ivory mouth opening onto the darkness within. A terrible stink drifted through the portal, the harsh, acrid tang of burned hair and meat. As the librarians strode forwards, they raised their four swords, igniting them with a thought and splashing crimson light across the buildings within. It was a charnel house. The light of their swords painted everything a nightmarish hue, but even in the broad light of day, the abbey would have made a brutal sight. The source of the smell was revealed. The square was heaped with blackened, charred corpses. Antros was so disgusted by the sight that it took him a few moments to notice what was so peculiar about the scene. "Nothing else is burned," he said, as they picked their way through the remains.
"Throne," muttered Zinn, looking around the porticos and balustrades that surrounded them.
"How can that be?"
The fire that had consumed the bodies had left no mark on any of the buildings. The gleaming skulls and ribcages that made up the walls and pillars were completely untouched by fire.
"Warp fire," replied Antros, sensing the hand of a powerful sorcerer.
Confessor Zinn's face crumpled with fear as he saw the full extent of the massacre spread out before them. He recoiled, eyes straining in horror, clutching his medallion.
"We must leave," he hissed. "Prester Brennus is right. There is nothing to be done here. We must go."
Only Zinn spoke of it, but they all felt the presence he was referring to. The ether light of the librarian's swords had barely raked the steps of the first sacristy, and the rest of the ruins were bathed in darkness, but the shadows were horribly animated. They all sensed they were not alone. Captain Vitrinus ordered Squad Seraphus to spread out around the courtyard, scouring the butcher slab streets for any signs of life.
"Report, Sergeant Hestius. What do you see?"
"We entered through the postern gate," said Sergeant Hestius. "No sign of movement. We've reached the bell tower now, to the east of the basilica." "Nothing but corpses."
Mephiston had reached the bottom steps of the sacristy, still flanked by Rasilus. The sanguine light of their swords washed over the steps and lit up the entrance. The doors were intact, but they had been flung open. Standing at the threshold, draped in shadow, was a man.
"You're not looking hard enough," drawled Rasselas.
"Shall we return?" Vox Sergeant Seraphis.
"Hold your positions,"
replied Mephiston, as he began climbing the steps towards the figure. "Wait outside the gate," said Antros to his two wards, and jogged across the square towards the sacristy.
"Who seeks enlightenment?" asked the figure at the top of the steps. The voice was friendly and full of warmth. The stranger walked into the light, and Antros saw that he was massive, almost as big as Mephiston, and was wearing some kind of archaic white power armour, edged with gold trim. Antros frowned as he studied the design. Beautiful, baroque details that were not quite the same as Adeptus Astartes' war gear, but still oddly familiar. It reminded him of the knights shown in the Librarium's oldest friezes. The regal-looking warrior seemed to have stepped out of prehistory. There was a helmet at his belt, topped with a black, transverse crest, and his heraldry was a stylized version of the Adeptus Ministorum symbol, the capital I, emblazoned with a spiked halo and a skull. In the centre of his cuirass was an enormous sapphire that gleamed with inner light. He wore a gilded bolt pistol at his belt and had an exotic-looking sword in his hand, a falchion of some kind, its curved blade engraved with an intricate pattern of whirls and loops. All of this finery only served as a frame for the warrior's beaming, jovial face. He had ruddy, tanned skin and black, perfectly straight hair that reached down to his waist, making him almost the reverse of the pale, white-haired Mephiston.
"I am Peter Zarambus," he said, smiling broadly, "and I bless you all for seeking guidance in such dark times. May I ask your names?"
He held out a hand to Mephiston in greeting, seeming genuinely delighted. Mephiston studied the ebullient warrior in silence, and a tense hush fell over the courtyard. Zarambus continued smiling, but it began to look a little strained as the seconds rolled on. Mephiston looked past him, into the shadowy interior of the sacristy. Then he did a strange thing. He stumbled slightly, as though unsteady on his feet. He looked back towards the gates, and Antros saw that his eyes had filled with blood, just as they had in the Carceri Arcanum. But this time, the red orbs were bleeding light, as though they were fire inside the chief librarian's skull. Antros was about to speak, when Mephiston turned back to face Zarambus and raised his gun. Zarambus's smile changed to one of cheerful disbelief, and he raised his hands in a placatory gesture. Then his head jolted back, hit by a single shot from Mephiston's plasma pistol.